As soon as. And we are live. Oops. Woo! Oops. Oops. Welcome, everybody, to episode 182 of Live at the Hive Digital Marketing from the Trenches. Without the normal musical intro, we will take votes and see whether that is a popular intro. I'm Dan Nadelko.
I'm Stacey DeSantis.
And I'm Justin Massa.
Disappointed there's no song. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
That's fine. You're voicing your disappointment. My name is Justin Massiel.
Awesome. And on today's Live at the Hive, so for some reason, I'm getting connection issues, but I'm getting 200 megabits per second downstream. So I don't know what's going on today.
You're just having a day.
I'm having a day. Sometimes technology just reaches its arms out and smacks me in the head on multiple different fronts. But we deep breaths, namaste. I got to get some patchouli or whatever the heck it is. What is it, Stacey? What do I need?
Well, I think the best line of the day is Dan slacking me saying that he's going to go outside and yell at the clouds because he was having some tech issues.
I think it was a scream at the universe, but.
Oh, well, clouds, universe.
Yeah.
It's really different.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll leave people that misconfigure WordPress out of this conversation today. Yeah. All right. So on today's Live at the Hive, we are going to be talking about how to build your brand in 2021. And that's one of the reasons Justin is with us today.
Yeah. Brand specialist up in here.
So yeah, we are going to be talking a little bit about what it means to build a brand, why it's more than just your logo, your visual identity. It spans a whole bunch of different areas and it digs deep into your communications and your community and how you create content. And we're going to be talking about how you can do that even on a limited budget and why you've got the most powerful tools ever in the history of the world to be able to do that and facilitate it. Cool.
That's like really dramatic.
I know, isn't it?
History of the world.
Well, you know, you've got the entire knowledge of humanity right here.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite a time to be alive. All right. So first, though, let's dive into what's new. So what is new? Let me just get that queued up and ready here.
Okay.
So as we all know, and as we've all been talking about, third-party data is going the way of the dodo. So this is the privacy concerns. I actually explained it to a client today. So Facebook has been using data from third parties and mobile apps and all sorts of other things to help you build custom audiences on their platform. And that's where you get all of the crazy hyper-targeting that you experience on these apps and on these platforms. And that's going away to a certain degree and with a new focus on what's called first party data, which is your data that's included in the platform. So Salesforce has expanded the first party data capabilities. And I think this is something we're going to see happen across all of these platforms where really what you're going to have to do, and that's why, you know, build your email list, right? Mm-hmm. Is you're going to have to start creating your own pools of data so you can then target your audience and keep them in the loop. So some of the new, I know you were quickly reading these before, Stace.
I was. So we kind of knew this was coming, but what I found interesting in the article is the talk of when you join in for a loyalty program with a company or a brand, they're going to be able to geo-target you, where you used your points, and all this will definitely help, you know, build up these types of databases so that they can still you know, personalize their advertising to you. So something to keep in mind, whether you're a brand or a consumer, you know, if you want to, you know, be uber private, then you may not want to be part of a loyalty plan.
Yeah.
And if you're a business, this is going to be a great way for you to still, you know, target ads.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the key things that came out of some of the conversations is I do predict that what's going to end up happening will be consumers will now be saying, why am I getting all these trash ads?
Yes.
I don't want any of this. This is like 1999, Punch the Monkey. I don't know if anybody remembers Punch the Monkey.
Yeah.
Are you talking about like that, one of those like games where
yeah, it was a mini game.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was kind of the low point of the internet.
There was a lot of them. I remember like a shooting game too, little ones like that.
Yeah. So yeah. It was in the heyday of banner advertising was Punch the Monkey. but, you know, I think one of the things that's going to be really important to continue to build your data sources, continue to nurture your audience, get more that you can get. And also, don't be afraid to purge those people that are no longer applicable to your business. No sense in having that bloat. No sense.
Yeah, you want to make sure that you have smart data points. You don't want to have... It's like having 100 emails and 80 of them are junk mail. Like you really just want to focus on those 20 that matter, that are engaging with you, right? So,
yeah. The other big part about this from Salesforce, this announcement, is the integration with Snapchat. So some interesting plays for businesses to reach a younger audience that is more comfortable with Snapchat. And I would predict that you're going to see Google's also working more closely with CRM vendors, not just Salesforce, but you're going to see, you know, Google, you're going to see Facebook, you're going to see Snap, you're going to see TikTok, all working more closely with CRM companies. And that's going to be the solution to the first party data or the third party data issue, I should say. Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's see what's next here. Okay. None of us are on these apps right now.
Yeah, I literally had to say to Justin before we came on live, I'm like, I'm also dating app, right? I've been married for almost 20 years. So like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Bumble has a ton of influencers. You see it a lot on TikTok and stuff, like in all the ads and stuff. They have a lot of... that's pretty much their main form of advertising is like brand ambassadors and influencers.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things here is that these brand ambassadors, one, they help spread the brand and the name of TikTok and Bumble. And it's a great way for students to get some great experience and, you know, learning about content creation, what it takes, management and everything else. So these ambassador programs are a really great evolution.
It's so smart. It's a total win-win situation. And they get a sneak peek into the wild, crazy world of content creation.
Yeah absolutely. You know what I mean? And works. It works really well. In the sense that this works really well with our topic today, because what we are talking about is the importance of, we're going to talk about the definition of brand, and we're also going to talk about the how your brand is built by your community and how you can use collaborations and influencers to really create a powerful connection to your audience and to your community.
Yep, because your consumers are going to trust an influencer over any messaging you really put out there. We'll get more into it, but... Yeah. You know, are you going to trust what an influencer has to say, or even like a micro influencer? I would say a micro influencer even has more power because they have very niche group of following, you know? And so it doesn't seem like it's so overt as like, let's say Kim Kardashian. She'd probably sponsor just about anything if you paid her the right amount of money. Right.
So. Yeah. There is a lot to be said for, large numbers of smaller influencers. So Gymshark, we're going to talk a little bit about Gymshark on that side of things. That's one of the things that they do. They have influencers ranging that do obviously have millions, but also in the tens of thousands and very targeted, influential, smaller, more targeted and niche communities.
Oh dear. Did you see Yvonne's comment? Punch the Monkey, where's PETA?
Oh, geez. I didn't make it up. I'm not touching PETA. No way. Anyway, I'm not helping altogether. All right, moving right along into the creepy world of IoT. Amazon is going to introduce Amazon Sidewalk. Wait for it. There you go. It's interesting. I don't know if I'm going to do it. But you can, it's a mesh wireless network called Amazon Sidewalk. It automatically shares bandwidth between the Echo and Ring devices to create a free Wi-Fi network. I'm not really too turned on by this personally. When you pay for a product and then voluntarily one of the largest companies in the world is going to pull your bandwidth and share it. Also, mm-hmm. I do have like privacy and security concerns, 100%.
Definitely. I feel like that's a hacker's dream to try to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you're getting lots of feedback, you know, on the consumer side. They see little need to worry, at least at this point, of course. But it will be interesting how marketers, and this is very much emergent, you know, what with voice and audio channels, how these kinds of things can relate. So it's something to keep an eye on. I'm very skeptical about how much adoption this is gonna get.
Yeah, especially like an Amazon Echo or something where like you said, like grabs your voice, right? And has those recordings and stuff. I don't know if I feel comfortable with that being open.
Yeah, there was another What's New article, and I don't know if I included it here, but let me see. I'll just flip over here. Facial recognition technology that detects whether you're smiling, and that would then mean a positive product recommendation.
What if somebody's just standing beside you and told you a joke and you're laughing?
Yeah. And now you have so many ads for a blender and you didn't even need one.
This would be a problem. I'm like laughing from 9 to 5. I'd be like,
it's definitely, let me just see if I can pull that one up quickly. I'm pretty sure I remember where I saw it.
Oh, I think I know where it is too. I saw that.
If not, we'll throw it in the comments there.
It's a MarTech.
So what happens if you have a resting B face as a standard? That is my wife. I always think something's wrong when she's spying. Yeah, I guess. You know, I don't know what they would do with that. It's some interesting AI learnings would have to come from all of that.
Yeah, maybe that's a way to get no ads.
I just think it's funny that Pippa's saying that. She's got the least resting B face out of anyone. She's always got a smile on her face. So.
Yeah, she does.
There you go. All right. Well, we are now at that time. So let's talk a little bit about building your brand in 2021 and what it means, why it's important. And what we want to do. So Stacy, you want to kick us off here a little bit?
Sure. So we're going to talk about how to build a brand for 2021. And it's not, it is, and it isn't as simple as one might think. We're not really talking about like, let's go into a logo design. What we're talking about is really understanding who your audience is, what emotion or messaging you're going to use to convey what benefits your brand offers, and how you can use these points to then build out what your brand is going to look like. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit too about brand recognition versus brand awareness. Yes, there is a difference. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Justin, you have anything you want to chime in here? Just about brand?
Like, I think Stacy hit the nail on the head. It's not just the logo, and it takes a community building to build the brand. And it's not just the visual side where like you can make it look as pretty as you want, but if you're not building the community behind it, it's not really a brand in a sense. You're just making it look pretty. Yeah, it just looks good. Yeah.
For sure. And I think these are all fair points. And this is not to dismiss. We're going to talk a lot about this too, so I'm not going to necessarily dive into it completely. But one of the things to keep in mind is that design is a process. It is a process that runs undercurrents through everything in a business. And creating those design processes helps build the brand. And then there's more that's layered on top of that. But one of the things I think that's most important, and this is like a pretty, I think it's a pretty famous kind of quiz question for people in marketing and in design. And the question is, you know, what is brand, right? And to put it simply, brand is what other people think, feel, say about your business and your products, right? It's not, you foster brand, but you don't define brand. Other people do, because it's how they're perceiving it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's right. Not about, you can foster it in terms of like consistency, making sure that your messaging is consistent across all platforms, making sure that when other people refer to your brand, that they're staying consistent to the message you want to put out there. But ultimately, it's up to the consumer or the purchaser to decide really their perception of the services you offer and, you know, what that means.
For sure.
Deep thoughts sure. by Stacey on a Friday.
So what is brand awareness, right? So there's brand awareness and brand recognition. And so when we're talking about brand awareness, it's brand recognition is, do we have that next one? I would have done it the other way around. There we go. So brand recognition is simply the fact that you recognize something, that there's been a built in, you've seen it in enough touch points. Also a huge thing about brand is age, obviously, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Older brands, established brands obviously have a more powerful recognition in the market, but brand recognition does not mean that you have brand awareness or brand engagement at all, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like okay. you can know what something is, but you don't have any preconceived notion of what your feelings are towards that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Was there anything else you guys wanted to kind of throw into this mix here?
I think there's a good point on brand recall too. If you know, you can recognize a brand, but I think you kind of hit the gold star when you have brand recall, in the sense that I recognize John Deere, but then I also understand what they stand for and what they can offer me.
Yeah.
And that's the little, yep. you know.
Yeah. That's the awareness part.
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So now that we're kind of kicking through, this process here, and again, you know, some of this is for businesses that may not have the resources to engage a marketing agency or a firm to help you build your brand. You can build your brand. And this is, I think, one of the key things. The power of social media gives everybody the capability to be a media company, right? To be a radio station with a podcast, to be a television station with a YouTube channel. And so you've got the tools available, unlike ever before, to be able to build a brand and to be able to create this kind of sense of a very well thought out brand, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of the things, and look, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm a big fan of Chris Doe in the future, or Chris Doe in the future. A great YouTube channel with lots of great advice. And it's really, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a ton of free content. If you've never gone to, you know, through a design program, like someone like Justin has, for example, you could actually get a full education from some really great design experts out there as well. Okay.
Exactly. But I think further to this slide in particular, it's really understanding you can have the same brand, but you could target different personas within that brand. So mm-hmm. I know it's a yes. big, like a big example, but like McDonald's, mm-hmm. they have their Happy Meal for their little kids. And then they have their, like, you know, no meat burger for old ladies like me that want to lose a few pounds. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. depending on that persona, they can change their messaging and that perception of the brand as well. And I think that a lot of people go into the create mode. Mm-hmm. But they don't take the time to understand the persona and then build up from that. What's that story going to be behind the persona? What's the emotion you want them to feel? You want mm-hmm. them to feel joy? Do you want them to feel peace? Do you want them to feel, you know, excitement? What are those different emotions? And then you can get into the whole creation mode.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Emotional connection is absolutely important. So yeah, take the time. We talk a lot about this, to understand your personas that apply to your business. And, you know, one of the most important things, I think, is don't make it up. Like, don't just go look on the internet and make it up. Try to talk to actual customers. Talk to your sales team. Talk to your customer support team. And just talk to your customers directly and start that conversation to learn about some of these points. And it's kind of hard to see here. But what you can see here is we dig into personal beliefs and statements of belief. We talk about philosophies and pain points, and really try to dig in and create that amalgamated persona. So we have an idea of who we're talking about. And to be able to understand how to draw that emotional connection, right?
Yeah. And what's their motivation behind needing your brand? Like, how are you going to be able to resolve a pain point they might have? Like you mentioned, it can even get as granular as understanding when that particular personality might have natural breaks in their day, when you could serve them social content or other bits and pieces, like, or even how they consume content. Are they visual learners? Are they would they prefer a podcast? You know, what is that? So.
And like, to your point, Dan, when you were saying like kind of talking to your customers itself, like this kind of persona should kind of be like ever changing in a sense. Like you should always kind of be looking back at it and being like, how can I detail this? What's changing with our customer as we're changing products as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a really good, that's an excellent point to make, Justin, because consumer sentiments have changed drastically over these lockdown times with the coronavirus, right? So there's a higher level of stress. There's all sorts of other anxieties that are popping up. And so it is really important to continue to evolve those personas and to continue to just never just put it away and, you know, let it gather dust. Yeah. It's going to help guide everything. So emotional connection is next. And this is a really important one. I feel like, especially in digital marketing, I shouldn't say that necessarily, but sometimes this gets lost. And emotional connection and emotional storytelling is literally how human beings function. We function based on this, right?
Yeah. Like, a number one question that I often challenge my team here at The Hive to think about is, why would that person care? Mm-hmm. How can you make them care? You know, it's like, I've used this example before, but like you could talk about, I don't know, a lawnmower. You could say, oh, well, it's got so much, engine power. Or you could talk about the fact that if you have a hard time with hills or mowing up a hill, you could use a lawnmower that will just, you know, guide you up the hill. Like understanding that emotion, like that it's about the functionalities, but the benefits, but it's also like, how are you going to make that person feel? Less stress, ease of use, you know, they can get to laying on their hammock quicker. Like,
yeah, depending on the brand too, like do you want to make your consumer cry? Like that can be a thing that benefits you. Do you want to be the humorous one? Depending on the brand, that really helps that person as well. Do you want to be the serious one? That kind of stuff brings up emotion in people, right? And that really targets people.
Absolutely. I often remember this one tweet that Kleenex did, and it was right when they were getting married, the royal wedding. And they purposely tweeted out, reminders to use Kleenex for the royal wedding. Because you always think Kleenex, oh, I've got a cold, but people cry at weddings. How natural is that? And it's just something that's always kind of resonated.
Yep. Hello, Courtney. Hello, Raunak, our newest bee. And also, hello, Hillary. Hola.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Courtney's got a great, this is an excellent piece of advice on copywriting. Replace we with you, make it about them. 100% change all of your website copy and your landing page copy to read towards your visitor, and don't make it about you, make it about them.
Yeah, call them out.
Yeah. And I mean, look, you know, the reality is, you know, like using the Infinity War and Endgame. Right? That emotion that got evoked made billions and billions of dollars. Coca-Cola does it all the time. Nike does it all the time, right? With all of their advertising and communications are not product-based at all. I think this was something I think we had on our call, is like, can anyone name a Nike product?
Well, Air Force Ones.
Well, there you go. Okay, Air Jordan, right?
Yeah, sorry.
Sure. Sorry. But yeah. But I mean, by and large, you don't know the model numbers of the styles, and they've got tons of differences. Yeah. So yes, find the emotional triggers. And just as an example, like if you're a moving company, right, doesn't sound that emotional, but high stress, biggest purchase of your life, there's so much to unpack there. And that goes across B2B industries that you may say are quite boring or stale, is you can find that emotion in just about anything. So really put some thought towards that.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. That's right. Yeah. Like how many times have you been in a store, you see the Nike commercial, someone's up at 5 a.m. on a track doing wind sprints?
Not That's me. Me every morning.
I used to be like that, but then I got older. But anyways, next thing to do, and this is a great, again, I'm totally ripping this off of Christo, but hey, why not, right? I stand on the shoulders of giants and I gave him credit. So this is actually a really good exercise. I want to talk a little bit about origin stories. Try to write your origin story. And there's a few tips here. I'm just going to run through Spider-Man really quickly. I know that Chris Du tried to do this on a Clubhouse. I was actually listening to it. I was like screaming at the Clubhouse because he went through like six people. Nobody could do the Peter Parker story. I was like, oh my God.
Oh no.
You faux nerds.
Was Nicole going, what are you doing?
I was silent. I'm very silent when I'm doing like yard work, listening to Clubhouse. It's my new kind of thing. Okay. So let's talk about a Peter Parker origin story. We'll break down the elements of what makes an origin story so important. Okay. I'm going to do this quickly because it can take a little while. Peter Parker's a nerdy, kid in high school, gets picked on a lot. Really smart, goes to, science, expo, gets bitten by a radioactive spider, starts to feel sick, starts developing these superpowers. He lives with Aunt May and Uncle Ben. Jeez, sorry, that was just a brain fart. That's all that was. It was nothing more than a brain fart. Aunt May and Uncle Ben, his elderly grandparents, they don't have very much money. So Peter Parker has all these newfound powers. He doesn't know what to do with, so he starts wrestling, right? And he's making a whole bunch of money. He's obviously kicking everybody's butt. He's winning like crazy. And the promoter refuses to pay him, rips him off, stiffs him, right? Then when Peter Parker's leaving, the promoter gets mugged. And Peter Parker could have literally just stuck his foot out. He could have done anything and stopped that robber. Because he was angry at the promoter, he decided to let that guy go. Fast forward later on that day, Uncle Ben is actually shot and dies. And Peter Parker witnesses this, his moment of passing. And then it turns out that the person that ended up killing Uncle Ben was the robber, the mugger, that Peter Parker let go of earlier in the day. Okay? So then Peter Parker learns a lesson through grief, and then he evolves into the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Short story, very condensed, right? They're about pivotal moments of change. Peter Parker didn't start out like Superman's a difficult one because Superman's perfect. Like DC doesn't even know what to do with Superman, right? He's like, they're trying to give him flaws now, but he has no flaws. Yeah,
but it's hard.
It's hard because the best superheroes, Tony Stark and Iron Man and Peter Parker and all these, actually any character in a movie, right? We love flawed individuals with redemption arcs, right?
Yeah.
So try to find your origin story, and your origin story is not necessarily about when you started your business. Like I started my business in 2001, and this is that's not necessarily your origin story. What made you who you are today? What was that pivotal moment that turned a corner, right?
Yeah.
It's
what was that trigger? Really?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
And the reason this is a really great exercise for any business to do is because it's at the very heart of storytelling, right? If you can write your origin story, you're going to have a compelling story. I guarantee you, anybody that's been in business will have a compelling origin story. anybody in a profession, you'll have that moment when something changed fundamentally, right? It's an excellent exercise, and it will give you, when you have your origin story, you can then tell your origin story, and you're creating content.
Right? Yeah. Cool. Foral Ice Cream here in town does a really good job with their origin story. You know, I can't remember it off the top of my head like you did with Spider-Man, but everyone should check it out on their site. It's really, really well done. Mm-hmm. And I just, the only thing I can remember from Spider-Man is really the theme song from the 1970 show. Remember that?
Spider-Man, yeah. Spider-Man. I have all of them, every episode.
No.
I love that.
I watch that every morning when I was getting ready for school.
Yeah, the great thing about that cartoon was the fact that they only had so many cells, like they only had so many scenes, so they had to reuse them over and over and over again. And the same thing with the characters, actually. Anyways, this is another thing about toys, like action figures. I don't know why I'm deviating on this, going down this rabbit hole, but why not? If you look at various different series like He-Man, and then you look at Star Wars and things like that, they reused the molds because they didn't have enough money to create new molds. So you often see like the G.I. Joes will look like a different type of He-Man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have this exact same build. So anyhow, let's get back on track since I'm the one doing all of the deviating from what we're talking about here. The next step in creating your brand is to create. Be in creation mode. Tell your story, right? And this gets away, and I know that even our team fall victim to this sometimes. And Stacey, you can kind of elaborate on that. When people say, well, I'm making a content schedule, a content calendar, that can feel very dry. It can feel very boring. But, you know, the creation of the content calendar itself is to help offload so you've got more time to do real-time stuff, right? But don't let that creation process become dry and stale. And you know, that's all leading back to that emotional branding side.
Yeah.
Emotional storytelling.
It might even be an offshoot of another show where we could show people kind of how we go about that. But what I highly recommend for our team to do is to kind of walk through that story through the month. So let's say you know, you have a content huddle with a customer and they want to, you know, focus in on a particular piece. You know, how can you, you know, introduce them to it, showcase the benefits to it, you know, let them know if they have like 24-hour service, you know, and then how do you ultimately, you know, say, okay, here you go to buy it, you know, and it's kind of like walking them through that storyline, not just to be like, okay, we're going to put 4 quotes in this month and then we're going to do one, no, like actually be methodical in your thought process and make it like a storyline. So it, one, the message is consistent. 2, you're telling your story in a creative way. And 3, you can have so many fun and so much fun. So many fun. I'm getting so like excited because this is my jam 100%, but you can really have a lot of fun using different media formats to tell that story in different ways. And, and it keeps it interesting for your audience as well.
Okay, we'll be here till 8 o'clock tonight if we let Stacey run wild.
I know.
Let's Sorry, move right on.
You got a content girl in the house here.
Okay, so now that we've talked a little bit about, and I do want to kind of just touch on design without even actually referring to any of these. I don't want the slides to become a handicap because obviously our millions of podcast listeners every week can't participate in that side of things. But I also want to touch on the design side, obviously, and get some of Justin's insights, because from my perspective, I think design encompasses the visual. You do want to think it out as a pattern and a system, but there's a lot of facets to this diamond that is brand.
Yeah, totally. Like some things, again, like when you're looking at your persona, you need to really look at what their taste level is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When it comes to like the style of maybe logo you want to do, maybe the colors you want to choose, even the kind of way you want to post social and how you want it to look. It's mm-hmm. I fall victim to this as well, as I know what's trending and I know what's really hip right now. You know what I mean? And it's hard to not pivot to that right away when you know that a target market maybe like, for example, like gambling, where some stuff are a bit more gaudy and mm-hmm. not as hip and trendy and kind of like monochrome. You know what I mean? So you really have to look at those personas, look at those people, and really look at not only like what they're doing, but maybe like their taste levels, what kind of maybe t-shirts they're buying, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, because that's going to really benefit you when it comes to creating that logo, creating the colors, or creating those social posts that they're going to really resonate with. Because mm-hmm. yeah, again, like it's really easy to go to what's trending, what's hot, but you need to kind of pivot that and look at what they're actually into, the target markets themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's I know that you do fall victim to this at times, and that's why we have multiple people working on these things.
Yeah.
But what resonates with someone in downtown Toronto or New York City will perhaps not resonate with someone that is from a smaller rural town or mm-hmm. of a different age bracket, right? Or different sensibilities. And so it is really important to kind of delve into the mind of your ideal customer and your ideal community, and really think about what resonates with them. I've done this like hundreds of times in my career, is where I will optimize a landing page and like do all the things and it's rocking and rolling and it's beautiful. And then, you know, you're testing and the page that would have your assumption of the worst conversion rate actually performs better than your whiz bang page. So, you know, it's a process, and it's not an easy process, but it's definitely putting yourself on the other side of it rather than designing for your own sensibilities. It's for your customer sensibilities.
Yeah. One kind of tip when it comes to designing, if you don't really like the aesthetic that you're doing, I guess for designers, is like, as long as the stuff is readable and the stuff that you are getting, it gets the point across, the aesthetic is on the other end. You know what I mean? Of what those people like, but as long as you're getting the point across, you're okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's something to be said for, and I used to say this all the time, is, you know, white copy, black background, use Bebas New or some other block font, mm-hmm. call it a day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, that's very simplified. But you know, sometimes simple design patterns that are known to work can also be helpful and useful in your process.
Yeah, making it accessible, readable, that kind of thing is more of a focus mm-hmm. than the aesthetic goes. Because again, like you want the story to be told, you want people to be able to read that, right? And mm-hmm. then the brand, on the other hand, like the visual can be whatever they're into. Like if that's something that isn't as modern, then that's what you got to do, right?
Yeah. And the other important thing, and this is where design is a system, you know, one of the things that, and stay out of the religion of it, but it's a good statement, is God is a designer, right? I mean, this whole thing, designs are patterns of systems. And when we're trying to do an effective design, we're trying to create pattern recognition so that your customer is going through this almost like they're swimming down a river system, right? That things connect for them. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's subconscious, much more subtle than right in your face. But you can create these pattern recognition in people's minds. You know, one of the simplest things, and this is, there's a lot to be taken from the world of infomercials. There's a lot of psychology that goes into it and learnings that they've had over, you know, the whatever 50, 60, 70 years that they've been around. One of the things is repetition, right? That's why when you hear radio commercials and they have a phone number, they repeat it three times, almost always, right? And it's a very basic type of pattern recognition, but it is there. And that's what design is.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So you want to think systemically and not from the logo perspective. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing infomercials are really good at is fear of missing out.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's tons of FOMO and scarcity and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to like the next point here, which is design is also your communications design, right? Mm-hmm. And now in our world of marketing, it's a huge component. But, you know, we've had potential customers come to us and say, well, we just do our Facebook ads. That's all we want you to do. And we typically don't do that kind of work. And the reason is because just doing Facebook ads doesn't really fulfill the dynamic of that multifaceted process. Like, what if your product sucks?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. What if you're overpriced? We've got to work on the product as well and the communication before we start spending your money on Facebook. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And again, you know, some of the things you can do with communications right now are obviously you've got your email channels, which becoming again increasingly important given all of these third-party cookie changes that are coming. Obviously, social, we're gonna dive into that a little bit. We're running low on time. Actually, we're over right now. But podcasting and live video.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm kind of looking. I know this won't help our podcast audience, but on that slide, there's a dude and a girl, and it looks like Justin and I. And when we were having our production meeting, we were talking about communication, and we said, we're kind of like the Wonder Twins, you know, I'm going to form into a bucket of water and, you know,
no, he's the bucket of water.
He's a beautiful gazelle.
You're switching the roles?
Wouldn't you're it be like a roles? Bucket and a mop? Do we have to go together?
The Wonder Twins, the boy was always like a bucket of water for some reason, or ice, and she was always like a flaming falcon. And she could transform into anything awesome, and he's like, I'm a bucket of water. Great. How useful are you?
Yeah. But they always found a way, and it was always useful at the end of the day. Yeah, even if he thought it wasn't useful, the target audience was there.
Another key point here that's really important to highlight is that the communication, when you're developing your communication strategy, I think oftentimes people will get stuck on broadcast communication styles and just the world that we live in, everything is two-way communication. So you have to think about, absorb and understand what that two-way communication is going to be like. How do you want it to go, right? And if you think about it from your dating days, you know, how do you want that first date to go? It doesn't even matter if you go out even, you know, how do you want that event to happen? Well, you've got to set the framework for that in order to have an outcome. You don't just want to wander out into it and be surprised by someone saying, you know, your product sucks. I didn't like it. It was 20 days late. It was, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, okay? I think. Through a theme in all this that everyone should remember as well, or I'd like to bring to everyone's attention, is don't be afraid to fail, because you know what? It's not really failing. You're learning something from it, mm-hmm. right? So let's say you try a certain type of messaging and you think, oh, this is going to be stellar. It's going to be that, you know, really awesome web page Dan was just talking about. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, it's okay, because now you can observe what is working and then optimize accordingly.
Yep. Totally. Yeah. That happens a lot. Like we will like A/B test just to kind of see like what's working, what's not, what's the difference between these two. And it can be something very small and very small, you know what I mean? But at least you tested it and you learned at the end of the day, which one worked better.
That's right. That's right. And I think you should always be testing your brand, right? You should always be testing those waters and be willing to change and be fluid as opposed to necessarily being incredibly rigid.
Yeah, you don't want to be looked upon as being outdated.
Yeah, and you know, this is the saying in the world of startups, which is fail fast, which means it's okay to fail, right? The baseball analogy is if I bat 300 for my entire 10-year baseball career, I'm going to the Hall of Fame. But that means I only hit 3 pitches that were thrown of 10 that were thrown at me. I missed 7, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea is being flexible enough and being willing to fail and then fail fast and then move on to the next thing so you can learn more quickly at a more rapid rate. Okay. We're going to just jump through. I knew it when we were doing the production meeting, it took us 40 minutes just to get through our review. So I knew we were going to run out of time, but that's okay. Why is social your number one most powerful brand building asset and tool? Is because of that incredible reach and the incredible capability to build a community around your brand that is engaged, that will interact with you. And it's absolutely, there's so much power behind it. And you don't have to be Kim Kardashian or, you know, whoever's, you know, the largest Instagrammer or TikToker. You can build a small niche community around your core. And your core could be 20 people. It's fine.
Yep. But that's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you want the engagement, right?
Yeah.
I think earlier today we kind of talked about that you'd prefer to, maybe you have like 3,000 followers, but if only 5 people are engaging with you, like what are you actually doing? Where if you have 20 followers, but 19 people are interacting with you, that's way better, right?
Yeah. I was working on a big social audit and communication social strategy this week. And you see several huge brands that had invested money into building a following. You know, they'll have 80,000, 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 followers. They get 3 reactions on a post. So clearly something's not happening here. Something's not resonating properly, mm-hmm. right? So that's something to keep in mind. Some tips for smaller brands is collaboration, create and share, find other brands that are a similar size, work together, collaborate, and get your networks, get the network effect going. You can pull people both ways across.
I mean, just look at TikTok. You can do a duet and you don't even have, like, there's, you can just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I was reading, you know, there are so many people that would have never been on TikTok before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then now it's their go-to. It's their TV. So, you know, you've got to not only just be on social, but you have to understand where your persona is. I'm not going to say customer, where your persona is. Mm-hmm. And then tailor and get on there.
Yeah, for sure. A few examples of great brands that you may or may not have heard of, and this also came up, is in one sense what these companies have done is really understood their core target audience, have really built a community around it, have really used all of these techniques to build their brand. And these are all very new companies. They're not super, you know, these are not 100-year-old companies. Gymshark has built a massive partnership and influencer network. It's the core of their marketing strategy, and it's a brilliant strategy. My favorite thing about Gymshark is, you read the founder, he's fairly young still. He basically said that was the only way we could kind of figure out how we would, like, it just made sense to us. It just, why wouldn't we do this, right? Yeah.
Especially in that market, it's, you know, how many people? Or like, mm-hmm. you know, how do you stand out? How do you make a difference? And mm-hmm. what I like about Gymshark is they're not only using influencers, but they're using influencers with real body shapes.
Yeah. They, the thing that they do with their influencer network is that it's not like they just throw them, you know, $10,000 per post. They send them the merchandise. They send them the clothes. They send them to influencer conventions and, you know, when they were able to, and fitness shows. And it's like, it's a very core part of their strategy and an investment point for them.
Yeah. And it's very smart for them too, because something like workout and like health, mm-hmm. there's a lot of influencers to work with. So it's really smart in the sense of they knew the community that was there and really benefiting of it and really targeting them, because they knew, like, there's so many of these influencers, like, we may as well take advantage of it, where like some companies don't really have that, the benefit of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, they've kind of created an immersive experience, but in doing so, they've created a community around their brand.
Yeah, totally. Another great one that I've always really enjoyed is Movement. Started by, I think the kid was 18 when he started it, to be honest. Pretty standout. This talk about really understanding your own customer, because you are your customer. You know, when you're 18, 19, in your early 20s, I mean, even now, I mean, watches can be thousands, tens of thousands, mm-hmm. tens and tens of thousands of dollars, right? And basically what he said is like, why can't we have cool looking affordable watches? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Swatch back in the day was really the, that I think that started the really low cost. Now Swatches are, those Swatches are worth, they're collectibles now. Right.
Yeah. Casio was one too. That was affordable. And now it's like high end.
Yeah. So these, so Movement's done a really good job of creating, a brand around affordable watches that are more about style than they are about time. That's really what it is. And that is the watch industry.
Right, and seeing this right now, like that's a great example of knowing your target audience, knowing what maybe your audience cares about, where like this is kind of targeting people that care about the environment, right? Mm-hmm. And really kind of honing in on that storyline to really, really drive the sales of the watches, right?
Yeah, this is a great example. So Movement is using reclaimed plastics that are found in the ocean and then recycling them into the watches, if you didn't, if you weren't aware of that. Anyways, or if you can't see this, you're listening to us.
Yeah, that brings emotion, right? Like people care about that. It's like, especially nowadays, like people are caring more and more about the environment. So like if you are kind of pushing that with your brand that you help them, that's a really big deal that really resonates with people right now.
Yeah, just think of the feeling they have supporting a brand like that too.
Yeah.
Totally. All right. Well, everybody, it looks like, 512. Hey, yo. We ran almost an hour today. So just to wrap it up quickly, we bit off once again more than we can chew, but hopefully we went through the whole process of what you can do to build a brand, what brand is, what design is, and how you can go through that process. And if you are a startup or a small business, you can certainly go through these processes yourself and you can be successful building a brand up and building that community that's going to support your business moving forward.
Well, all right.
All set. All right, everyone. Well, thanks once again for joining us for Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. We will see you next week. Same B time, same B channel. Stay safe and enjoy your weekend.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
Bye.